Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Let's get out of here.
Oh, before we go, because I'm upset that this is the final Honda Classic. That just bothers me. Now, at the end of this, I know you weren't watching, but at any point did someone say, I'm going to wake you up early because I'm going to take a ride with you?
We're going down to the Honda shop. I'll tell you what we're going to do. Put on a ragged sweatshirt. I'll take you any place you want me to. First gear. It's all right. Second gear, lean right. Third gear, hold on tight. It's a little Honda by the Beach Boys.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
It's a curse and a blessing. I know the words to everything written that was popular between 1961 and 1972. There's nothing I can do about it. Nothing. Zero. And I know them.
That song haunted you in particular, did it not?
I sang it to myself all night for two nights, little Honda. Yeah, because you didn't even know that Honda made motorcycles.
It's not a motorcycle,
it's a groovy little motorbike.
Motorbike,
it's
yes.
More fun than a barrel of monkeys, that two-wheel bike.
Yes, when I first heard the song, I did not know
that.
I'm
going to turn on my light and we can ride my Honda all night. It's just nuts. I can't get it out of my head.
Great song.
Gregory Thomas Garcia, board op extraordinaire, is sitting with us today. At some point, we will ask him a lot of questions about his own life. But at the open, we sort of talk about my life. And something happened within the last 20 minutes when Greg came in the door that changed my life, or potentially, has the potential to change my life. As Michael can tell you, I wore the same pair of New Balance sneakers for 8 or 9 months, every single day. I'm in a new pair now that I bought myself in Delaware about a year ago, and I'm not crazy about them. And the New Balance sneakers got to be so ripped up that I had to get rid of them. And Michael, you said to me, because I said, my instinct is, let's get our guy Kirk Taylor, who works for New Balance,
sure,
to give me a box of that for free, because that's my instinct. What can I tell you? That's what I want to do. But I want that exact sneaker. What is
right, you want the 990 V5.
Right, is that a new sneaker or an old sneaker?
So the 990, I think, original is the sort of the dad sneaker that we all remember. This is a newer version that has thicker cushioning, and I think I said to you, pull out the credit card, Grandpa Tony, I'll go drive over to Dick's Sporting Goods and get you a new pair.
And I looked at you like you were from the moon.
10.5 medium.
I'm not doing that.
I see where this game is going. Right. That's, again, 10.5 medium.
Right, so Kirk Taylor. So even last night at the end of PTI, I went, Kirk Taylor, call me. And this is what I'm getting to. I went, Kirk Taylor, call me, and then I said New Balance. And Wilbon, after the show, says, oh, no. No, you got to get Hoka. And I thought he said Hoda, like Hoda Kotb. And I don't know what Hoka is. And dropping down from the skies is Greg wearing Hokas.
Yeah.
What? Can you explain this?
Well, I had problems with my toes, right? My big toes had some kind of bone spurs or arthritis or something. And I went to the doctor and he said, well, you can get surgery at some point, but try these shoes. This was like 4 or 5 years ago. Try these shoes. And he called them Hoka One Ones. But I guess they're just
Hokas. They're not Yeezys,
now.
Though.
No.
Because you can get Yeezys for next to nothing right now.
I can drive down the street to his house and get them. I kid you not, one time he was on the corner, like a lemonade stand, selling Yeezys.
Like 2 for 1?
Yeah, and they were taking pictures for Instagram and stuff, and it was their whole family. It was all the Kardashians, him when he was still with her and everything. Just driving down the street, and like a lemonade stand, Kanye West was selling shoes on the corner.
Just unbelievable.
It was bonkers. Bonkers. I sent my son down there to get a picture. But anyways, yeah, so I'd never heard of the shoe, and I went on the website to buy them, and they only had like two pairs, two different kinds, and they were so hideously ugly. But I got them, and my family made fun of me, and they give you like 2 inches of height. I mean, it's just like, it's ridiculous. And they're so comfortable, and they're sturdy, so my toe wouldn't bend as much. And I loved them, and my toes felt better. And then over the years, they've gotten more and more styles, and now they have all
kinds
of stuff.
It's the official shoe of the second home now.
Yeah, it's like when I went
You've
to Pittsburgh to shoot, the whole crew had them.
I first
Everybody
heard about
that
these
was on their feet.
You
would
travel to any golf course, and you always see what the caddies are wearing. So
well,
if you
travel
through Florida, you'd see them wearing these Hokas. So Liz now has a pair of these. They're the most recognizable colors. But if you go back a couple years ago, everyone used to be wearing the Allbirds. 2 or 3 years ago, it was all about the on-running shoes, the no-tie laces, which I'm wearing myself. And now it's all about the Hokas.
And I'd never heard of it. And it makes sense for Wilbon, because Wilbon's had foot troubles. Wilbon's
right.
had operations
yes.
on both feet. So Wilbon wouldn't have known Hoka on his own, I wouldn't think. somebody must have recommended them, and you endorse them fully.
I love them, and my wife has like ankle problems. She has them, loves them. My son has an ankle problem. He has them, loves them. Yeah.
Are they domestic made? Are they foreign made? Do you know anything about the company?
Hoka One One. Is that Hawaiian? I don't know. I don't know much about the company other than I wish I would have invested in it 5 years
ago. It sounds like Aiko Aiko Ande.
Yes, it does.
You know, Chacomo Fino Anande.
We need a hookup is what we need. We need.
Well, that's why I'm doing
yes,
the open.
Of course. Yes. You know, I mean, we need.
I mean, my instinct is the same as Steve Young's. Send me a big box of that.
I'm looking here on Wikipedia, so we know it's got to be true.
Right.
Hoka One One stylizes Hoka.
Well, that's Oni Oni.
That's what the doctor said. Oni Oni. Maybe okay. He was trying to be fancy.
Right.
Oh, and not say Hoka 1-1.
Is an athletic.
Like 4-1-1, like 9-1-1.
4 One One.
Well, you got to call 9 One One if you have a problem.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
What? Come on. Where are you living?
It's an athletic shoe company originating in France.
In France? Oh.
Yes. So.
I've never.
Nicolas Mermoud and Jean-Luc Diard. So if you're listening,
those are phony names.
Hopefully they're little.
Yeah, those are total phony names.
They've been on with Chuck and Roxy.
So yeah, where am I? 30. Where am I on the on New Balance? Am I? Is that another proof that I'm a tremendously old man? Because I like New Balance because they're wide and they're good for old flat feet.
No, you have to be careful with that one. There is a famous New Balance meme that just shows your shoes in various stages of decay,
decrepitude.
It goes
as,
from the dog.
As am I.
The you know you'll. Do errands around around the neighborhood. Then you do the car washing shoe or the cutting the grass.
Well, when I got to the point where I could poke my big toe through the shoe on each side, I knew that the shoe had to go.
But my larger point too is, you found a shoe that helps stabilize whatever pain is going through your body. You should probably lean into that and get a couple of pairs.
Yeah, well, that's what I thought. I mean, when I was a kid, well, everybody wore Chuck Taylors, Chucks. You know, the Converse sneaker, yeah. And you wore them. You know, you weren't allowed, when I went to high school, it's a long time ago, I grant you, girls were not allowed to wear pants to school, and nobody could wear sneakers. And nobody even rebelled against this, because, okay, what's the difference?
Girls were just naked from the waist down?
No, they had to wear, that would have been interesting. No, they had to wear skirts.
Oh, okay.
They had, or shorts, skirts or shorts, but they had to, you know... These were rules that went on, and this was a public school. Not in parochial schools, people wore uniforms. I guess they still do. I'm not certain about that. But girls could not wear pants. I mean, that was... No. Teachers didn't do that. Teachers, like, they wore dresses.
Yeah.
Like, the women, not all the men.
Yeah.
The female teachers wore dresses. The men wore jackets and ties and suits and stuff like that. School was a... I'm not going to say it's a formal experience in the sense that you had to sit there and somebody wrapped your knuckles or anything like that. But that when you went to school in the same way, and you see this in old pictures all the time, when you went to a sporting event, you didn't wear a T-shirt and a pair of shorts. Well, you didn't necessarily dress up, but you dressed like you would for the rest of the day, or you might have dressed up. When you went to a Broadway show, you did dress up,
mm-hmm.
You know. Like even Margaritaville, people would have 30 years ago, 40 years ago, they would have worn jackets and ties, even though everything about that show said relax and be casual.
They would still be dressed up.
Did you do that? Was that true? You're younger than I by a lot. Did your high school wear pants?
Yes, I believe so. Yeah, I think they let them wear pants.
Did you? Did yours?
I went to high school in the 2000s. Yes, I know. Girls were allowed to wear pants.
Well, you went to private school.
St. George's. Yeah,
did you have girls?
We did have girls. Yes, and I think they wore pants. I don't think they would. There was no specific uniform for them, but the boys, I know, we had to wear coat and tie every day.
So this is one. Yeah. I'm not unfamiliar with that.
Jeans were not allowed.
When I see people, this is another thing too. And Greg, as you and Nigel are around the same age, people when they went to a nice restaurant. They put on clothes to go to a nice restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And now...
Pajamas.
Well, now it's not... Am I right?
Flip-flops, pajama pants.
What is that like in California? California is the bastion of casualness.
Yeah, it's very casual. Very casual.
Does anybody dress for anything?
I mean, it's casual, but it's not like sloppy casual. You know,
right.
I mean, it's more just, you know, it's nicer casual.
So it's Johnny O type stuff.
Johnny O type stuff. Absolutely. Yeah, especially at the beach. Yeah. It's just, it's, but it's definitely casual. You never go, oh, we can't go. Like, we were dropping my kid off at high school last week, and we were in this little town, Los Olivos, which is kind of like a wine country town and stuff. And we're like, let's go to this restaurant. It's an amazing restaurant. And normally I would think we're not dressed for this restaurant, but no, it's very just casual and laid back.
That has changed. So that's changed in the last 20 years.
Those are the standards we're trying to get over here, because for years you've had dress codes for restaurants and other sort of night institutions. We always wonder, well, whose standards are those? But culturally, so like, just because you think coat and tie is dressing up or nice, it could be a really nice sweatsuit or, you know, really nice shoes.
A really nice sweatsuit?
Yeah.
Depending on designer, it can't, the no, cut, it actually yeah. can't be a really yes. nice sweatsuit.
Or like an
that's
Al
what Wilbon wears really nice sweatsuits to fly. I still, at my age,
jacket.
And I know that. Well, no, not necessarily jacket. I know I've eaten at the Palm 10,000 times, and I know that I can walk in here wearing whatever I'm wearing, but I don't. If I'm going out, I wear going out clothes because I'm so old. Because that's what I grew up with.
Do you think some of that's the armor of Tony Kornheiser, who's on PTI every day? Tony Kornheiser, who was with the Washington Post, where if you go around the city or to a restaurant, people expect to see you look in a certain way?
Maybe, subconsciously. But I'm talking about the conscious part of the decision. And I don't think it's... Maybe, yeah.
You don't want to be wandering around in pajama pants.
No, I really don't. Or a fancy sweatsuit. If I'm in a fancy sweatsuit walking down the street, I expect to be picked up and taken to a mental institution.
Yeah.
It's just not... It's not
I don't
me.
Get that on the plane. Is it people in the pajamas and the? It's just taking ridiculous. I do dress off. Comfortable on a plane because I'm gonna have to sit there. But
well,
I
if
don't
you go
get...
private, you can wear what you want, but you still wouldn't, right? You'd still
no. But I don't normally fly. I mean, well, I rarely.
The thought that should go up through a person's head is very simply this: when I get off this plane, what if there are cameras?
Yeah.
What if, you know? Oh, yeah. What if it's paparazzi? What if it's what's that show that does that all the time?
TMZ.
What if TMZ's waiting for somebody else?
Yeah.
And then they see me. And I can't.
There's always that terrible photo, and then like Tony Kornheiser looking a little out of it as he walks, you know, whatever. And
it's the Nick Nolte photo. Yes. You can't have the Nick Nolte photo.
Plus, on the way here, on the flight here, I'm sitting next to Washington Commander Milo Eifler. My favorite Washington Commander, and I got to look good.
He's
a linebacker.
Never heard of him.
He's amazing.
Now, we'll get into Greg's life when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
I'm Trey Wingo. And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Could be sciatica, herniated disc, lumbago, Bertolotti syndrome. I can barely move. Glad I don't have any hair I'd have to comb. Well, it's a shooting pain, a sharp shooting pain. Call timeout, pull me from the game. I'm doubled over, hobbled, lame. It's a solo stove of flame. My good leg went bad. I never thought it would. My good leg went bad. Now I'm waiting for my bad leg to go good. I'll try acupuncture, acupressure, chiropractic, laparoscopy, rough me, whatever you could. My good leg went bad. Now I'm waiting for my bad leg to go good. My good leg went bad. Now I'm waiting for my bad leg to go good.
It says simply to Matt in Atlanta, challenge accepted, Dan Byrne. He's a genius.
Yep, he
He's
really
a genius.
Is.
It all, but it sometimes makes me wonder, is he devoting time to his actual career? You know, I mean, or is he just listening to this show and writing things for us?
Rather seems amazing. Yes.
He's an incredibly creative guy.
He is.
And which leads me to Greg. What are you working on? What are you doing here? Why'd you come in?
Oh, I'm here just to visit family.
Okay.
Just to hang out. Yeah, and talk about doing nothing but listening to the show and writing stuff into you guys. That's what I've been doing these days. I'm waiting to hear about Sprung Season 2. They told me about three weeks.
On Freevee. I found Freevee on my television set.
Fantastic.
I found it. I know where it is. So
that's cool.
Great. Yeah.
They told me 3 weeks ago they'd tell me if there's going to be a Season 2, but now it's March 1st, and I realized they didn't tell me. They told me at the end of the month they would tell me. They didn't tell me which month, I'm realizing. Because it's March 1st and I haven't heard anything. So, yeah. So I've been waiting to do that. And you know what I've been doing, which is pretty depressing? Pretty sad. I've been playing virtual reality poker. Have you ever put those goggles on your head?
No, I don't.
It is the most depressing, saddest thing in the world. I put these things on. Someone gave me for Christmas. I put them on. I sit at a table. It looks like I'm sitting with people at a table. I play poker with them. I chat with them.
Wait, you chat with them?
You can talk with them.
Are they people?
I can smoke. Yes, they're real people.
Do you light a candle for the ambiance?
They're all. You can do anything. You can smoke a cigar. You can do whatever. You can hand somebody
they
a cigar.
They can see you?
It's cartoons of you. You make your own cartoon. So you look like whatever you want to look, or avatar, whatever they're called. And then you play poker, and they're from all over the world, and you chat with them, and 3 hours go by, and I can't look at myself in the mirror.
They're real people.
They're real people. And you have to have Facebook, right, to sign up. And
I didn't sign up for the Facebook.
I don't have Facebook,
so
right?
So this is the metaverse.
Yes, this is the metaverse. So I don't have Facebook. So when I went to sign up, on my computer showed a Facebook thing that we had done for the character Earl J. Hickey long ago. And it was still in my computer. It was still active. And I said, okay, we'll just link it to that one. It's no connection to me. So my name on the thing is Earl J. Hickey. So once in a while, somebody will go, hey, Earl J. Hey, it's a good show. You like that show? And I go, oh, yeah, I like that show, whatever. But one time I'm on there, and this Australian guy's sitting across from me, and I'm going to do a terrible Australian accent, but he goes, Earl J. Hickey, all right, man, yeah. He goes, you like that show, man? I go, yeah, it was a great show. I loved it. He goes, yeah, me too. I go, oh, you liked it? He goes, liked it. Changed my life.
What?
And I go, what? And he goes, oh, changed my life. I got into some trouble. I was in juvie as a kid, you know, and we'd watch that show, me and my mates, you know, and I just realized I wanted to turn my life around like Earl did. I'm a human rights lawyer now.
What? Did you ever tell him who you were?
This is one of the only times. I said, buddy, I'm about to blow your mind. I said, you're not gonna believe this, you know? And so I tell him, and he's like, oh, are you kidding me, man? And so now he's playing, like, there's only three of us playing, and the other guy's being quiet, and now he's asking me all these questions, you know? He's asking me all these questions about the show.
While you're playing virtual poker.
And he's such a fan of the show, I'm folding pocket aces, because I don't want to knock him out. I'm having more fun listening to this guy, right? He's a big fan. It's awesome. Well, eventually, the other guy knocks him out, so now it's me and just the other guy, and who's just has been quiet the whole time. And then he starts going, so you ever have to work again? Huh? And I go, yeah, I still work. Anyway. You got children? And I go, all right, I'm out. I got out of there. Yeah, it got weird real quick.
Oh,
yeah, but it's sad. It's sad. I put those things on, and then somebody walks in the room, and they just shake their head at me, and just it's so pathetic. I got to get back to work.
So
I really do.
Do you have anything going on with Nate Bargatze?
We always talk
now golfer extraordinaire who took $500 bucks from Larry Fitzgerald.
We were chatting the other day about possibility of doing something. You know, he's on tour. He's always busy. I'm always busy. We want to do stuff. He's kind of just become a friend at this point. Even though we started kind of working on a project together, I came in and helped out on a project. That's how we met. But yeah, there could be something down the road. And I was picking his brain because my middle son just started doing stand up comedy.
Wow.
Yeah, he just did it for the first time
really?
Last week or 2 weeks ago. He's got a show tonight again, and he's digging it. So he's happy about that. But first, he's going to Fiji for 3 months. He got a job on the show Survivor.
He's not on the show. He's working the show.
His job is like he's called a dream teamer, and they like him and like 20 other people. They kind of help build the challenges and stuff, but then they have to test the challenges. So they have to see like how long is it going to take, or is that too far to jump? They'll be like, "Hey, Nate, jump! Oh, yep, that's too far." That's
right. Broken legs.
Yeah.
What are you giving?
We got an email about Nate.
Oh, from Dick Gabriel in Lexington, Kentucky. It always makes me happy to hear you speak of comedian Nate Bargatze. That's because a while back, Nate's father, Stephen, an accomplished comic magician, was a regular in a celebrity golf tournament here in Lexington hosted by the TV station where I used to work. In between magic tricks, Stephen would brag no end about his talented young son who was just getting started with his own career. He predicted many great things, and of course he was right. You may also be interested to know that Nate is a cousin to Ron Bargatze, formerly the head basketball coach at Austin Peay, and later a color analyst on the Vanderbilt Radio Network. I didn't know that. I had no idea about that. But I did know, because Nate Bargatze told me that his dad used to do magic tricks in prisons.
Yeah.
He was the guy who would go to prisons and do magic tricks.
And he'll perform with them. They just performed together in Vegas. He's a nice guy. Last time I was there, I went to do his podcast, and then he just said, "Well, just stay at my house for a couple days and then fly back with us." And then he was going to stay at my house with some comedians while he played out in Thousand Oaks by my house. I said, okay. So I show up with a suitcase and I walk in his house and his wife's there and I meet her for the first time. And he goes, what room should Greg stay in? And she said, oh, Greg's staying with us? And I go, this is, nobody announced anything. And right. So then we were going to play golf, but he had to try on clothes for his special. And I ended up just sitting in the living room for 6 hours. I was like weird Uncle Greg. The daughter's walking through. She's looking at me like, who's this guy? And I ended up with the father and the mother at the girls' softball game. I just tagged along for like 2 days. But I had a great time.
So
good family.
When you work...
Yeah.
Can you work on multiple things, or can you only work on one thing at once?
I can. I tend to just work on one thing at once. I kind of get laser focused, tunnel vision on something. But sometimes if there's two things to do, I can do it. Like when I was doing the musical, I was doing other things at the same time.
So when you start to work,
yeah.
Do you dive?
Yes.
What's the day like? What's the week like?
My process is like if I'm like, I have like ideas that I'm kicking around in my head. So I might go for a bike ride. I might go for a walk. I'm in the car. I'm always talking into my phone with different ideas. And then when I feel like, okay, I know the story, I can sit down. I know the ending to the story. Oh, man, I've been watching so many movies lately that don't have endings. It drives me nuts. Nuts.
When you are a writer, when you're writing a big story, the ending,
it's,
you get before the beginning.
It's everything.
Yeah, the ending.
The ending is everything. So when you watch these movies...
Bad writers have bad endings.
We watched a movie the other night, Triangle of Sadness.
Oh, well, is that the Aaron Rodgers story?
Yes. And it's not a bad movie. It's good. Woody Harrelson's in it. There's funny parts and everything. But then the ending, you're just like, what just... And then my son looks up. He goes, well, the director said, they asked him about what happened in the last scene. He says he hasn't decided yet.
But
he hasn't decided yet.
He released it?
Yeah. It's so artsy. So anyway, when I know that I have something, then I'll sit down and I'll just start. And I'll sometimes sit down at 7 in the morning and I won't get up until 3 a.m. Like my wife will come in and go bring me a sandwich
Where
and go
do
walk
you work?
Around.
Where
in my house.
Physically?
In my house. I have a chair, very comfortable chair that has like a desk, swing desk that attached
to it. And it's away from others, right?
Yeah. It's in the back of the house.
Yeah.
Or I'll just go somewhere else and just be alone. But I will write for 14 hours straight. And just get done a terrible version of it. And then I'll go back over the next 2 or 3 days.
Yeah, because the most important thing is the structure, right?
Yeah, just get it
done. You have to know what the structure is.
Get it done. You know, like, okay, this will be funny. I mean, too many people write scripts and then they get bogged down with like, oh, I got to have a great joke in this thing. And then you have a joke that you love, but then you got to cut it because it doesn't work for the rest of it. And all of a sudden, the jokes are controlling the scripts instead of the story. You got to get the story done.
So... when we started on WTEM, if I'm not mistaken, it was the week after Memorial Day in 1992.
Okay.
I think I have that right. Did you know then, and for how long have you known, this is what I want to do?
I didn't know then. I mean, I knew I kind of liked writing, and I had written some stuff in college. Like I wrote an advice column in college. Where I would just write the answers, the questions and the answers. Because
right,
nobody was sending anything in. And that way I could control the humor because I knew what the question was going to be. And I would set stuff up and whatever. So I enjoyed that a lot. And I had taken a TV writing class. But I didn't, when I started at WTM, I still thought, oh, I'm just going to do I'm just going to do radio. This is what I'm going to do. And then, lucky enough, Warner Brothers called.
You won an internship,
yeah,
right?
I won like a little internship, yeah. So then,
I mean,
so
you,
then,
were gone,
then
you were there and gone in an hour. You were a hurricane.
Yeah, I wasn't there long. Yeah, a few months. But then once I went out to L.A. and I got a taste for it and saw what these people did, and they sat around a table and just told jokes, and I was like, okay, I'm going to go take a shot at this.
Is there... When they sit around a table and tell jokes, is that, are they working, or is that just who they are naturally? It's like at a table read, at something like that. Is that what that is?
No, the table read is when we sit with the actors and they read the script and we just listen. And then we're marking our scripts. That joke didn't work. That joke did work. The story kind of feels lame around here, whatever. And then afterwards, the studio and network will give you notes and go, okay, this is what we think. And then you go off and you do a rewrite. Then you're sitting around the table in the room, which now mostly is done by Zoom. Everybody does Zoom rooms now, which I didn't do for Sprung. Instead, we worked in my backyard because I couldn't stand doing the Zoom stuff. But then you're sitting around a table. And then it's a combination of you're working, you're not working, you're working. Okay, somebody starts to tell a story. We're all laughing about that. Then you get back to, you know, it's back and forth. And it just keeps things loose. And so half the stuff ends up in the script and half the stuff you're like, that could never go in. We couldn't do that, but that's funny.
Are there people... And I don't know how this works because I wrote something other than comedy. Are there people you really trust, or do you just trust yourself more than anybody else?
No, there's a handful of people that I work with constantly that I really trust. There's a woman named Gina Gary who she actually started as an assistant and has worked her way up, and now I can't do anything without her. Like, right. She's the first person I give everything to.
Her ear is what you need.
It's fantastic. And what's great about her too, and I have a couple people like this that aren't, that have known me and worked with me so long that they're secure, that they're not afraid to tell me you're a moron. Right. This is bad.
Right.
This is bad. You know, and there was, like, in particular, I'd write a story for Sprung or the guest book, I think it was, and I would send it to Gina and she goes, yeah, this one, it just doesn't make any sense. And I go, okay. And you feel like punched in the stomach. You're, oh, yeah, I can fix it. So I work on it another 2 days and I send it back and I'm like, what do you think? And I think most people would feel the pressure at that point to be like, yeah, it's good. And she just said, it's different. It's different than it was before.
Right.
Still not good.
Not great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And but that kind of stuff and those people in your life keep you honest to be like, okay. And the good news is at the end of the day, if you disagree with them, you can always say, no, I'm good with this, and you can move on. But so I don't mind having those people in my life who are always going to be judging me and questioning what I'm doing.
So when I started out as a writer and I had, and everybody who, whatever profession anybody goes into that they want to go into, they always have an idea that how can I get better? It's important to get better. And I want to know what the people who are good do. I want to know how they run their lives. And I remember reading a story about Truman Capote. And Truman Capote, for whatever else you might think of Truman Capote in terms of being a slave to Vogue and fashion and the now and all of that, is a great writer. And everybody knows that he wrote, not Harper Lee, his first cousin, To Kill a Mockingbird. I mean, this guy's one of the great writers of all time. And I remember reading, he said he got up, no matter what day it was, didn't matter. He got up at 8, and he worked until 4. And if he didn't get a word on the page, it was okay, because he needed that sort of discipline. And I tried to do that, and it was insane. I couldn't do it. I mean, mine was more like yours. Mine was like a bright light. If I had an idea, I just stayed with it till I fell asleep out of exhaustion.
Yeah.
You know, I just couldn't let it go. I had a... What I would say charitably is a different kind of discipline, right? That's how you feel about the way you work.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that the other thing too is people ask me like, oh, how do you write? How do you become a better writer? And I'm like, I don't know. I have no idea. You just, I sit down and I do it. I'm sure the more you do it, the better you get, and you learn by your mistakes. And, you know, even when I'm not working on, like, I've been writing this thing lately, which I've been recently told that nobody will ever want to publish because I'm not anybody, but I've been writing stories from my life, and those are fun, and it's just exercises to write, and it's a book called Stories I Tell at Parties. And it's just short stories about different things from my life. And even just doing that, like saying, okay, I'm going to write one of these a week, it just keeps the muscle going.
I agree with that.
Yeah. And just
I used to sit
going.
Down when I was 19 or 20 or 21 and I knew what I wanted to do and I just didn't know how to do it. I used to sit down and I used to take a word, one word, and try to construct 10 or 12 sentences with that word. and, you know, try to be funny or try to be serious. I mean, if I could make you laugh and make you cry, I knew I was in.
Yeah.
You know, the stuff in the middle, nobody really cares about that. Make you laugh, make you cry. I mean, that's the whole deal in writing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for me, the biggest thing is always the story. Even though some audiences with comedies don't even realize how important the story is, that they're drawn in and everything, because you watch some comedies and there's no story and it's just characters and jokes, and that works sometimes. But for me, it's always about the story first. And the one thing I tell people is, like, don't get distracted. Don't, like, when it gets hard, don't just think, okay, well, I'm going to change it to something else. You, like, stick with it when it's hard. It was, I was watching a masterclass with David Mamet, and I didn't watch the brilliant. Whole thing, but brilliant guy. And brilliant. He said something that I go
third
back to.
Third place is you fired.
Yeah. that's my basketball, my March Madness basketball pool every year. First place, $5,000 to your charity. Second place, steak knives. Third place, you're can't play next year. You're banned. But anyway, what brilliant. He said, which
Main
was,
Street is such oh, a yes. brilliant movie.
Yeah. And what he said, which I go back to, which isn't really practical advice that helps you too much except for emotionally, he was saying that when he gets stuck telling a story, when he gets to a place where he has no idea where this is going to go, instead of getting frustrated, he gets excited because he knows that whatever he finally comes up with is going to be a surprise to the audience. Because if he can't think of it yet, yeah. they're not going to think of it. And so many times people have said to me, oh, this was so easy to write. And I was like, yeah, because everything seemed expected at every turn. Of course it was easy to write.
We'll take a break. Liz Clark will join us and talk all about the Washington football team. I was going to say the other word. I can't say the word. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is our friend Brett Wiskons. This is from his album Late Bloomer. This is a song called French Cafe Inside a Dream. And he writes, as you might remember, I'll be performing on the Good Vibrations cruise hosted by the Beach Boys. Yes, the actual ones featuring Mike Love and Bruce Johnston. Also appearing will be the Righteous Brothers, the Isley Brothers, the Temptations, and Uncle Jesse himself, John Stamos, good friend of Greg Garcia, among others. We leave out of the port of Miami this Friday, March 3rd, so that's in 2 days. With stops in Belize and Mexico, and Tony, I'll see you on the Lido deck. Yeah. Sure. It's the only cruise I would ever take, and I wouldn't take that cruise. It's lovely. The song is lovely. Michael, if people like Brett Wiskons want to send us their original music, how do they do it?
As always, send us your music by emailing it to jingles@tonykornheisershow.com.
And the song plays in Liz Clark, who normally would be sitting with us, but she has to work, and it's okay. And we want to talk. And this has now become, in my mind, this is always a local story, but it's a national story now. As we get closer and closer to the point, to the possibility that, in fact, the other owners in the NFL will say, I've had it with this guy. Let's get him out of here. So let us start with the desire for the indemnification. Indemnification against what? And how did the other owners feel about that Dan Snyder has said, this is what I want?
Yes. Well, good morning, and thanks for having me.
Yeah.
So we reported with the fabulous Mark Maskey carrying the load earlier this week that Dan Snyder has informed the NFL that he has some demands that they must meet before he sells the team. Chief among them is that they must indemnify him against, you know, any future claims and I believe legal expenses in order to sell. And then that he also wants them to kind of bury the findings of an ongoing investigation. So, you know, he wants to be indemnified, we are told, against any and all future lawsuits. So just
even those, let me just interrupt for a second. Even those not necessarily stemming from his ownership of this team, I mean, a blank check for the rest of his life?
Well, no, okay. I speak recklessly. I mean, presumably things related to the team.
Right.
So say
okay.
The Mary Jo White report comes in and it gives rise to claims of sexual harassment against him, or, you know, there's a claim of defamation. There's, you know, there's an ongoing lawsuit, I think several, about the railing collapse at the stadium where some fans were injured.
How about the raw sewage down on your head in the suites?
Yeah, so,
that's
fun. You know, the team must play there at least four more seasons. Needless to say, no one's going to be spending money on upkeep. So,
right.
You know, as the thing falls into the ground, you know, will there be other lawsuits? So the whole gamut of ownership-related lawsuits. Oh, for example, maybe a class action suit by people whose season ticket deposits weren't refunded. That's kind of in the process of being sorted out by various attorneys general. And I'm sure there are categories I've not thought of. But basically, he wants, you know, the league to, you know, prevent him from having to pay money after he's gone. And the league is outraged. I mean, bordering on laughable. Are you kidding me? I should not be so melodramatic, but yeah, they don't think this is an appropriate request. In fact, they think, some think it's he who should be indemnifying us for any suits against us. But it's not going over well. So I think you could say Snyder may have overreached with his demands.
This is interesting to me that he would want this kind of indemnification, but it also, there may be a larger issue here, at least to me. He then seems willing to sell the team. I never thought we would get to this point. I thought that his entire identity was cocooned into owning the Washington football team. And if he's doing this, should this lead us to believe that indeed he will sell the team fully?
Yeah, boy, God, I wish I could talk with you an hour. Your skepticism was right on point. It is the only reason, you know, he is known. And it was always hard to picture him walking away from it.
Yeah.
So I'm still a little skeptical. Could he play out the string another year or two? I mean, what I'm no longer skeptical about is that he will have to sell the team. He'll be parted from the team. There's an issue that needs fleshing out, and Don Van Natta of ESPN had a great story about a loan that actually we've known about for 2 years but could never get reported, but he got the documents that enabled him to write about that. What I'm getting around to is the issue of debt. There's a good bit of debt on this team that Snyder has taken out. There's an amount of debt that every owner is allowed to have, and the league, if you recall, 2 years ago allowed him to borrow an additional $450 million.
Yes, they gave him that permission. They did that.
Yeah,
yes.
So that was fine. But that, it's like a mortgage. I mean, you have to pay it off. It's not like anybody's giving you this money. It comes due. It certainly comes due much sooner than a 30-year mortgage. And so there's a money due the bank, and then he also has to pay it down to get back into NFL compliance. So this comes at a time when his revenue, the category of local revenue that he doesn't have to share with the league, that's cratering. It's like the bottom has fallen out. Anybody could look at the attendance at a game and tell you that. So, and unlike several owners, Snyder does not have wealth separate from the team.
Yeah, it's all in the team.
His net worth, the value of the team, it's the same number. It's not like value of the team, and then he has oil wells and shopping malls. And
no, he's not Jerry Jones.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I mean, I guess he could go to Joe Biden and say, could you forgive this? It's a student loan. And maybe that would work, unless the Supreme Court says not. But you had a very interesting phrase, Liz. Mm. You said he'll be parted from the team. Mm. So does that suggest that indeed you believe that we have reached the point where the other owners will say enough with this guy? We've got to get rid of him by fiat.
I would have told you up until a couple of days ago that would never ever happen. The league has never voted any co-owner out. They've never taken a vote. I mean, people have lost their teams for bankruptcies, for misbehavior, but those things are negotiated and arranged out of the public view. The league doesn't want any lawsuits. They're very buttoned up about how they resolve conflict. So I would say never in a million years would they actually take a vote. But I do believe in the minds of some owners, this latest demand is a bridge too far because they did do him a huge favor with unanimously approving the debt waiver on top of what you might interpret as a favor of never releasing the Beth Wilkinson report prior. I mean, the league has accommodated him, as they do other owners, you know, from time to time, in a lot of ways. But the debt waiver was a big deal and, you know, enabled him to resolve a potential lawsuit with his business partners to own now basically 100% of the team.
Yeah.
It wasn't the favor, it seemed. I mean, it was a huge favor if, in fact, he got the financial house in order, paid it off, boom, and now he's sitting on a $6 billion asset. But there's not a lot of sign that that's underway.
Does he have, I take it he has no support among the other owners. I mean, if Jimmy Irsay came out to slam him, you would think that there's nobody that will come to his aid, right?
Well, you know, and it's not a personal issue. It's just, as you know, all 32 owners want to win and they want to make money. But then it's a given. You're part of a socialist enterprise. You have to share very specific revenue. You have to keep the interest of the league in mind. You know, you're part of a collective, and the bulk of your money comes from the national TV deal.
Yeah.
You haven't earned it. The league has earned it. So it's just 24 years, I think, of fatigue with Dan Snyder doesn't seem to accept this, whether it's reports of his withholding, hiding revenue he's supposed to share with the owners, now threatening the owners and, you know, causing embarrassment to the owners. I mean, so much of his behavior doesn't rise to the occasion of should we actually vote him out. But there are some who are posing that question among themselves now. Is it worth And it could be just a big game of chicken. I mean, Snyder is saying, I'm going to sue you if you don't give me this. And they're saying, well, maybe they'll say, we'll give you one of three of those, or we'll give you two of three of those. Maybe it still will be resolved. And he will sell, get a big fat check, and the league moves on. It's still being resolved that way.
I certainly understand him not wanting to sell to Bezos, because Bezos owns the Washington Post, and he gets slammed in the Washington Post. I can't believe the league would consider Tillman Fertitta. He has completely ruined the Houston Rockets, and he's in the restaurant business. He doesn't have real money, and he doesn't really have real money. Maybe this guy Josh Harris has real money, but I'm wondering, you know, seasons end and then they begin again. We're not that far from the beginning of the next season. Do you have some sense of when you think he will actually be out? Because it doesn't look like it's going to be this coming season, does it?
Well, it's, you know, my sense changes a couple times a day.
Oh, okay.
But the league's annual meeting is later this month. It's March 26th to 29th. And the finance committee will meet prior to that. And any movement on this particular team's ownership, whether that's reviewing bids from buyers, you know, potential buyers, or, you know, reviewing their finances, or do we want to recommend this is irredeemable, we cannot fix this, we need to take a vote. Anyway, they will discuss the situation with the commanders, the finance committee. So, you know, super, super fast track miracle, maybe the end of this month, it's resolved. I doubt that. I mean, I tend to be skeptical, especially you could argue that Snyder may as well just play out the string. And, you know, if he continues to hang on to the team another year or two, the one certainty is the value will go up. Another possibility is the league will change its ownership rules, which it has to do eventually because they're the most restrictive. It includes that one owner, the main owner, has to put down 30% of the purchase price. And if you're looking at $6 billion, that is $1.8 billion. And that's, you can't just say, here's my oil well worth that. You have to, like, cough it up. You have to
give them the money.
Give up $1.8 billion and not
in
feel
20s.
It. Not feel it. And so, and no, the key thing I'm not saying is you can't have private equity. You can't have an international fund, like a Qatari, Bank of Qatar, come in and help you cover all those costs, like the NBA has allowed. All other pro sports teams are loosening these rules because the number of mega, mega billionaires who can write this check are small. Given the rate of appreciation, it's way more complicated than selling a house. You know, you want lots of buyers if you're selling a house, or lots of bidders. And the NFL, you know, you're going to run out of Walmart heirs and Bezos people.
Yeah. Actually want teams. All right, we all wait. We all wait, and we encourage you to continue reporting. We'll talk soon. Thank you, Liz.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks. Liz Clark, boys and girls. We'll take a break. We have email and jingle when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
I can just picture the hammer on a giraffe that doesn't work, even though right now he's supposed to be going up and down.
I can still see him slumping. Bootsy reminds him every day.
Bill Pitcher, Pennsylvania, on the organ. Fabulous. You want to do the Bethesda Bagel ad?
Yes, Bethesda.
You're going to give Greg a bagel today.
Yes, that's your prize.
Very exciting.
Yeah, that's Chuck and Roxy prize. May not have a gift bag for you, but we've got a bagel for you.
Oh, yeah. Man, Chuck and Roxy, why won't they call me?
Yeah.
So, Bethesda Bagels, we love them. You will as well. Just go to BethesdaBagels.com for the location in the D.C. area nearest you. Then pop on in, and you will be thrilled.
That's about it for us today. Before we get to the mailbag, let me just say, now, once I was downhearted, disappointment was my closest friend, but then you came, and he soon departed, and you know he never showed his face again. That's why your love keeps lifting me higher. This is Jackie Wilson, the great Jackie Wilson. Thanks to our guests today, Greg, Liz Clark. Thanks to our sponsors, MeUndies, Rocket Money. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Odyssey. If you get the show on Apple, please leave us a review. From Rob Gioielli, maybe, in Cincinnati. This Saturday, my parents will be gathering in Vero Beach, Florida to celebrate. My family will be gathering to celebrate my parents, Bill and Louise Gioielli. Oh, it's written here, Gioielli. 50 years ago this month, the two of them eloped from their home in Long Island to get married in Albany, New York. This boy from Massapequa Park and girl from Freeport soon decamped for Washington, D.C., where my dad, who had done two tours in Vietnam, would enroll in Georgetown University, transferring from Nassau Community College. My mom had recently finished her degree at Adelphi University. I know where all these things are, and I know how to drive there from my house. I was born a few years later. Then came my brother Casey, sister Katie. About 10 years in D.C., we moved to Cincinnati, where my dad took a job with Xavier University. Bill and Louise spent more than 3 decades in the Queen City before retiring permanently to Florida a few years ago. Although my siblings and I consider Cincinnati our hometown, over the years, your radio show and now your podcast has been a great reminder of Long Island and Washington, the places that my parents called home for almost half their lives and that birthed our family. Thank you for a show that reminds us of the deep history of our lives and families in wonderful ways. This is a long one from Dave Morrow in Denver, Colorado. Many years ago when I lived in Cleveland Park, which is in a neighborhood in Washington, yeah. D.C., my dentist was up your way at 4444 Connecticut Avenue Northwest in the 20008. Dr. Berg was a kind, gentle dentist who never made anyone feel bad about their teeth, a great man. He died too young, leaving as many patients to the dentist the family sold the practice to. And I add parenthetically, the guy was a butcher. The last time I went to the dental office after Dr. Berg had left the building, the lead hygienist, Ivy, still worked there. She said that grown men and women would come in for their appointments, high-powered people in government, business, and radio broadcasting, and would weep openly when they learned Dr. Berg was gone, like they had lost a family member.
Yeah.
You have a special bond of intimacy and trust with a good dentist. Unrelated, I'm finding a growing number of co-workers who are littles. I was visiting D.C. recently, having a drink with another salesperson, knowing little else about him. 15 minutes in the conversation, I asked if he was a little. "How did you know that?" he asked. "I don't know," I told the sarcastic sports-adjacent middle-aged guy standing before me. "I guess you fit the profile." John Kaminsky, pretty good guy. Also worth mentioning my sales engineer, Eric Shirk, another solid little. Everyone now wonders why we flip each other off during team meetings. So I do think about this, about the dentist thing, because I've talked about Dino Majuli all the time. With doctors, it's different. You go to a doctor, and it is routine for a doctor to say, "See this other doctor."
Yeah.
You know, you got a problem on your foot, go see the foot guy. You got a problem in your arm, go see the arm guy. You know, all of those things. So there is a culture of doctoring that includes large amounts. But dentist, one guy. Dentist.
Yeah.
You have your dentist for 20, 30 years. Your dentist leaves or dies or whatever. You go, "Oh my God, what do I do now?" Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Dentist. You know, dentist. And your acupuncturist, I'm sure, if I had one. From Jim Cudahy in Locust Grove, Virginia. While living in Charlottesville about 20 years ago, I was standing in line when the man in front of me finished checking in and turned around. I found myself standing face to face with John Grisham. Yeah, that John Grisham. When I got home after the dentist, I told the woman to whom I'm related by marriage what happened. Let's just say she was a little too enthralled by my encounter with Mr. Grisham. She promptly called the dentist and made an appointment for herself exactly 6 months later at the same time, convinced Mr. Grisham would have done the same. Fast forward for 6 months and John Grisham was a no-show, foiling her plan to trade me in, and she's stuck with me. From Kenny Lane, not Camp Kenny Lane, my Kenny Lane in Albany, New York. I feel like I might have had my first David Aldridge moment. While paying a bill at the vet yesterday, I looked up to see this poster and I said, "I know this game." And it's a poster of "What Will Your Pet Eat?" And it's all the terrible things: socks, underwear, pantyhose, rocks, balls, chew toys, corn cobs, bones, hair ties and ribbons, and sticks. Yeah. Okay. From Gary Mundy in Edgewater, Maryland. Primanti. Man. Every time man, not mon, 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 etc. Primanti Brothers. Okay, I think we're good on that.
Primanti Brothers, okay.
Yeah, Primanti.
How good
Got
were
it.
The sandwiches?
Oh, so good.
You had them all the time, right?
Oh, I ate them so much, and they're so thick.
French fries and coleslaw.
French fries, coleslaw, bacon, capicola, cheese, lettuce. Mm. It's like this giant thing. And I would pick it up, and I would be too scared if I thought if I put it down, it would all fall apart. So once I picked it up,
it.
I never stopped holding
you're
it
done.
Until I was done. I'm leaning over with a straw to try to get some liquids, but I'm just holding on that thing like it's a life preserver, and I'm in the middle of the ocean.
Ryan Dovell, Harrisonburg, Virginia. In the greater Appalachian area of Virginia, a pom-pom hat is commonly referred to as a toboggan. It wasn't until I went to college in Missouri that I found out the rest of the country uses toboggan as a euphemism for a sled. From Ward K in Vienna, who used to email us all the time.
Yeah.
Had a DA moment during the Wednesday mailbag. Terry Schoonover shared about his wife being in a play at Talking Horse Productions in Columbia, Missouri. I know that theater, even though I've never been there. They produced a play I wrote called Permission as part of their monologue series. The connective tissue of the show astounds. In the shameless self-promotion mode, I also need to say that at a theater in Falls Church, Virginia, we'll be performing another play that I wrote, Mr. Taken, at Nova Night Sky Theater the first 2 weekends in March. So that's coming up this weekend. It's a show that your audience will like because it's smart and funny. I'd love for any loyal littles to come and give me a hearty cheeserie. from Sean Morrissey in Conshohocken. Is that how that's pronounced
yep.
in Pennsylvania? During Wednesday's show, you played a song from one of the many talented contributors who will be cruising the high seas with the likes of the Beach Boys and the Isley Brothers and the Temptations. This led you to question how many members of the Temps were still with us. I thought there was one. Just one.
Yeah.
My parents took my brother and I to see the Temptations at the Four Tops at the Palace Theater in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina in 1997. Even then, I remember commenting to my dad, so we're going to be seeing the Temptations in the Three Tops? In December, I got an email from a local theater in the area promoting a holiday show with, you guessed it, The Temptation and the Four Tops. Curiosity took me down the Google machine rabbit hole. Here we are in 2023, down to just one remaining member for both iconic groups, including Temptations founder Otis Williams, which reminded me of my favorite David Ruffin quote from the 1998 made-for-TV movie The Temptations, in which a drug-induced Ruffin exclaims, "Ain't nobody coming to see you, Otis." Yeah, because they came to see Eddie. And they came to see David.
Yeah.
And that was it. From Dan Reichel of Limerick, Pennsylvania. Inspired by Michael's new grilling paraphernalia, I'm looking into getting an apron embroidered with my name and Chuck and Roxy episode number on it, 182. You can't get on, right?
I can't get on. I don't know what it is. My agent's been trying to get in touch with them.
Yeah.
It's nuts.
From Alexander Pop, love the darkness quote today on PTI. That was the other week when Aaron Rodgers went into the triangle of sadness. Yes. You know, Aaron Rodgers is holding us hostage. I mean, come on, stop. Ray Lynn, New York City. He told you Tuesday and it turned out to be Monday. Face it, old man. He's just not that into you. That was Carville. From Jamie Julian. As a lifelong Chiefs fan who grew up poor in rural Missouri, I've known heartbreak. I watched the Chiefs disappoint, underachieve, and choke in the playoffs for decades. The first Mahomes-Reed Super Bowl was cathartic, but this one is even better because it means that I never have to hear that dope Wilbon say a dynasty of one ever again. Can I apply to be the official Chiefs fan on the Tony Kornheiser Show? I think I've earned it. P.S. I was number 5 with Chuck and Roxy.
Wow.
Being a chatter bride has its privileges. I'm sitting here with Greg. He can't get on. From Michael in Cottage Grove. The Howling Game is the one. My border collie mix, Freddie, eats plenty of stupid stuff, but nothing so different it's worth writing about. But Howling is where she shines. The woman to whom I'm related by marriage is a middle school band director, which meant we had a middle school band room in our house for virtual learning in 2020 and 2021. Freddie loves to sing along with the different reed instruments, with saxes, clarinets, and bassoons. It is funny, and the kids loved it. It isn't constant, and the cute factor outweighed any interruptions. Oboes, however, are different. He howls with them so consistently and loudly that I would have to come get him during oboe lessons, or she'd bring him into the office and lock him in with me. Eventually, I learned the lesson schedule, and a couple of days a week, I'd eat lunch and drag him in with me. We assumed the particular pitch of an oboe was why, but it was always odd how he had just a limited interest in the others and almost no interest in helping the brass instruments. There were always going to be a number of challenges with virtual band, but howling along with oboes wasn't on the original list.
No.
And this is one I wanted to get to. This is Adam Benson in St. John's in Newfoundland. I can't participate in the game what my dog has eaten because I don't have a dog, but I was on the Loyal Littles podcast, episode 27 with Chuck and Roxy. I'm in the top 20, so I have that going for me. P.S. I have a cat. I'll keep you posted if he eats anything weird. You're not in the top 20.
Top 30.
Not in the top 20.
Yeah.
The top 20 ends with 20.
Yes.
I mean, sports writers understand this.
Yeah.
You can't try to tell me you're in the top 20 at 27.
You can say the top 20s.
I mean, maybe this is how it works in the Maritimes, but that's not how it works here.
That's Frostburg math right there.
That's right. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
I'm 70-40 publicly against the spread on Tony Kornheiser.
Who is Tony?
Tony Kornheiser.
Who is that?
That's a PTI guy on ESPN.
Okay.
Harry Melvin, what's up, bro?
Could be sciatica, herniated disc, lumbago, Bertolotti syndrome. I can barely move, glad I don't have any hair I'd have to comb. Well, it's a shooting pain, a sharp shooting pain, called timeout, pull me from the game. I'm doubled over, hobbled, lame, it's a solo stove of flame. But good leg went bad, I never thought it would. My good leg went bad, now I'm waiting for my bad leg to go good. I'll try acupuncture. acupuncture, acupressure, chiropractic, laparoscopy, rough me, whatever you could. My good leg went bad, now I'm waiting for my bad leg to go good. My good leg went bad, now I'm waiting for my bad leg to go good.
Take a drink, I wonder.